Thank you. What is a covenant? I ask this quite frequently in my classes that I teach with the children and youth here, and they've gotten wise to my questions over the years because it doesn't take them long to come up with a definition of covenant that is more than just rules. It's a promise. It's a promise that my heart makes to your heart. I don't know about you, but I take my promises very seriously, and pinky promises are the most sacred. Will you take care of yourself? I ask a youth who has been in and out of hospital for self-inflicted wounds. Yes, they promise, and I come back with, pinky promise? They hesitate, staring at my pinky. We both know that I just ratcheted up this promise to an unbreakable level. I wait tense, knowing if they say yes, I will have ensured their safety for at least a little while. They finally answer after a lifetime of waiting. Yes, I pinky swear. And we clasp pinkies, solidifying the sacred pact. We worship one another in covenanted communities. As Unitarian Universalists, we are not bound each Sunday by rules and commandments, but each Sunday we willingly commit a pinky promise to one another. We covenant, as we say, may love be the spirit of this church, may the quest for truth be its sacrament, and service be its prayer, to dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, and to help one another in fellowship. This is our covenant. We aspire to be this to each other. We covenant and aspire together of our own free will. There's no one forcing us to do this. We do not have an overarching God figure telling us to say these words or be damned to hell. In fact, the idea of someone, even God, could tell you use to agree on something is, well, blasphemy. Our own free will and the ability to decide for ourselves makes the individual spiritual journey sacred. Reverend Victoria Safford explains our Unitarian Universalist beginnings this way. You know, when someone asks what kind of church this is and what it means to be a member, I often talk about a river of history. This church has its own story dating to 1956, and that story is carried within the larger, older history of Unitarian Universalism, which flows from two separate streams, each a strong tributary of the river of American Congregationalism, which flows out of the Protestant Reformation in Europe and in England, which branched off from the Roman Catholic Church in the 16th century, which in turn was one stream running down the centuries from the waters of the early Christian Church in Alexandria, Jerusalem, and Rome, which of course flowed from the mystical headwaters of the ministry and the teaching of the man Jesus of Nazareth. And Judaism flowed out from the desert, out of nomadic bands and wanderers, people who stopped their caravans at night, gathered around small fires, casting questions into the embers, up to the stars. Where do we come from? What is our purpose here? Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover, are leaving. Ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again come. And by those questions, they were bound to everyone, everywhere, and always. That's the river of religious history that we flow out of. It's a powerful story of religious freedom, freedom of conscience and radical love. Conscience and love are not uniquely Unitarian or Universalist. But our history has flowed in such a way that when either of these is constrained, compromised, or diminished, we've always been among those who have broken off from the mainstream and flowed freely into a new direction. Just this week, I was talking with my friend and mentor, Helen Bishop. She's a longtime member of First Church. And we were reflecting on some of the ways UUism has carved out new paths and new directions within our own faith institution. In the 1990s, way before Journey Toward Wholeness, the UUA had a part-time employee that was for gay and lesbian concerns. They were only part-time because the UUA board surmised, through our principles that we respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person, that this faith community cannot be homophobic. We could not possibly have those challenges within our denomination, and they were considering getting rid of that part-time position altogether. Helen is lesbian, and in 1992, while she was the director of religious education here at UUFSD, she felt told in very specific ways that she was not welcome to be gay and be a dearie. So she left. She left this position and went on to have an amazing career as a religious educator in other churches in our denomination. From First Church in San Diego, she and her partner compiled responses from a survey they had placed on behalf of the UUA board in our Unitarian Universalist magazine called The World. Since mostly UUs subscribed to the magazine, she was relatively certain that all of the responses were either from UU members or friends. Her favorite, that she recited to me from memory all these years later, was from a member in upstate Wisconsin. He'd been on an extended hunting trip and had missed the deadline, but informed Helen and the UUA board that, quote, he had a pickup truck, 3 guns, and he knows how to shoot. And that if ever a DRE or minister of his congregation was gay, he would know what to do about it. The UUA board was horrified with the discovery that the oppression of GLBTQIA people was alive and well in their congregations. That just because we covenanted together each Sunday to aspire to our ideals as seekers of truth through love doesn't mean it actually happens. This assumption without intentional focus causes harm. The Unitarian Universalist Association launched a welcoming congregation program to help us how to undo homophobia and later transphobia in our hearts and minds, our congregations and communities. And for the last 25 years, the UUA has worked hard to make sure that gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer people are full members of this faith community. Many of our members can proudly say that they've looked at the heterosexism within themselves, challenged the social norm that queer is bad, and through their own personal bias work, we've collectively pushed our UU river into a new direction of acceptance and love. I am here before you now to lift up that Unitarian Universalism is at a critical place in history in which we need to veer off from the mainstream institutions and flow freely into a direction of deep inclusivity and awareness. Some of you went to see my art show at First Church in San Diego called Unos Cuantos Piquiquitos, which translates to a few small nips. It was up for 2 months this spring, and if you're interested in reading more of my narrative, the online link to the website is printed in the order of service under sermon. I came up with the title based on Frida Kahlo's piece she painted in 1935. She was reading the paper one day, and there's this sensational story about a man who had killed his girlfriend using a pair of scissors. And on the stand, he said, "What? I only gave her a few nips." In this art show, the metaphor of a few small nips are the micro and macroaggressions that people of color get every day in this society. What makes my art show of interest to UUs is that it's about my personal journey, my experiences and nips that I've experienced, not given to me by society at large, but this society, Unitarian Universalism. Our sacred community has given me some of my most deepest emotional scars. Having to resurrect big and little hurts long buried for this art show and sermon wrenches at these scars and breaks open the tender skin that has yet to heal. For let me be abundantly clear. These aggressions are not just said and forgotten. They may be forgotten by the antagonist, but as the receiver, I live them again and again. I thought long and hard about what nips to include in this sermon. Unfortunately, there's a plethora to choose from. I started using my full name here at the Fellowship, Allison Aguilar Lopez Gutierrez McLeod, in response to steady oppression from a former minister. After the first year of his ministry, the administrator of this fellowship and I brought our joint concerns to the district lead, hoping he would facilitate a conversation, a beginning with this minister, that we could start over again. What the administrator and I walked into was not collegial and was far from covenant-based, as you can be. Recriminations, attacks in that meeting. Why do you use all of your names? I'm Italian, I can use all of my names. The president of our congregation barely vibrated with hostility when she asked this. She ended up writing me a letter 6 years later, apologizing for her role in that meeting, how she was influenced and swayed by the minister and asked for my forgiveness. Because of the way we were shut down in that meeting and how the minister reacted to our concerns, our administrator of this fellowship retired 2 years early, and I started using my full name, the only form of protest that I could bring that would not result in outward hostility by most. I remember the first Sunday that I used my full name here at the fellowship. I prepared myself for questions, surprise, perhaps confusion from the congregation. I was hoping for smiles and acceptance. And I stood at this podium and introduced myself with my full name. I just hadn't prepared myself for the laughter. The congregation, in its discomfort, laughed. I remember being so surprised. Did I say something funny? I pasted on a fake smile as the laughter stung, and there are still today questions of, which name do I use when I introduce you? All of them. You use all of them, for all of them is a part of me. And let me explain, for I should have done so from the beginning. Aguilar is from my birth mother. Lopez Gutierrez is from mi papá, my birth father. And McLeod is the name of my mother and father who raised me. I could not cut out a name and belittle the sacrifices of my birth parents who brought me to America and gave me the opportunity for the remarkably rich life that I lead now. There are many other times in which the former minister aggressed against me. I will not inundate you with them, but to give you one more example, he stopped me one Sunday in a core area and pointed to a 12-foot-high poster that was posted on the fellowship hall of a chihuahua in a sombrero. And he pointed to it and said, "Do you find this offensive?" Startled, he'd never asked me anything before what I found racist or not. I answered without a filter, "Yes, it's incredibly racist." He comes back at me, "Why didn't you say anything?" I thought, how could I say something, anything, to you regarding racism after you shut me down and told me to be quiet? Besides, isn't it your job to teach this? But that went on in my head. I didn't say anything to him. I just stared and sort of mumbled about needing to finish to get ready for services. I found out that just a couple years ago, he went back to the auction committee, and instead of explaining why this was culturally insensitive and was a microaggression to all Mexican Americans, he said, "Allison is offended by this, and we have to take it down." You might be thinking that this is just one bad apple, or our personalities didn't work well together, and I wish it was that simple. But it's not. This is institutionally wide. 2 years ago, I was banned from Camp de Benneville Pines by a regional staff person for being insubordinate, because I had another woman of color, one of our UUFSD youth, continue to braid my hair after she was asked to leave a space for counselors only. It's a long and sordid story, but suffice to say that my job here at the fellowship was threatened by this regional youth specialist. In emails which I share in my show, he threatens that you are currently not on the UUA list, but if you continue to talk about this with people, you will be. This list is kept at the UUA. No one knows who keeps the list, and no one knows who is on the list. But when you get on this list, a letter is sent to every minister and congregation saying that this person should not be allowed to work with children or youth. My job as a director of religious education would have been very difficult to do had I been placed on this list. In the letters to the congregations, they don't specify why this person shouldn't be allowed to work with kids, but you can imagine that speculation about my character would have run rampant. I'm also not the only DRE of color who is female that he tried to do this to. I know this because in working closely with my good officer from Lareda, which is the Religious Educator Foundation, that he had threatened another, but she was too scared to come forward because of the repercussions. I was not afraid of him and his lies about me and my character, and what gave me the strength to stand up to him and fight him on this assassination of my character was you. This congregation, you gave me strength because I trust you with my love and I know that love is returned. Even though I have been aggressed upon, I also realize that most of it was unintentional. My story is not unusual or special when religious professionals of color get together and share experiences. For too long, the vast majority of UUs have turned away from what people of color have been saying, "You're hurting me. This beloved community is hurting me, one micro and macro aggression at a time." Our faith is awakening to our own awareness that this mighty river that is Unitarian Universalism, that the water in which we swim flows in white supremacy. We know that our history was built in white supremacy culture. We know that we turned away when we could have moved forward during the civil rights movement. Promises spoken were undeniably broken. And our silence for years as people of color have left this denomination as we continue to wade oblivious in our systematic oppression. Though we've broken our vows 1,000 times, though we've broken our vows 1,000 times, we cannot deny the pain and shared experiences that are being told. And as we created welcoming congregations for our LGBTQ siblings during the 90s, it is now time to dismantle the systems of oppression of white supremacy that is causing so much harm to people of color. I'm happy to say that I think that the dismantling is starting to happen. Since the spring of 2017, in which religious professionals of color brought this injustice to the larger awareness, there has been a clear and deliberate power shift at the UUA. And due to that shift, the UUA and all of the professional associations are listening and responding. I won't be silenced. White supremacy teach-ins have reached hundreds of congregations. Beloved conversations continued with renewed energy, and systemic oppression is in the process of being identified. Part of this shift in evaluative process was the creation on the Commission on Institutional Change, where they encouraged religious professionals of color to speak their stories of oppression as collective voices of experiences. My art show has been added to this collection. Our leadership is changing at a national level with intentionality and the realization that, as a faith, we are not who we claim to be. But we can be. We can and must live into our faith ideals. It is this possibility and belief through love that you can hear me when I say, "That hurts." I'm here. I am in covenant with you. I have pinky promised to love you and serve with you and seek the truth with you. What I'm asking now is for bravery. Bravery to look inside your own lived experiences with a new lens of anti-oppression and anti-racism. I ask for bravery because I know that this path is scary. I ask you to listen because your beloved church family is hurting, and we need you to hear our stories for there to be healing. I ask you to be comfortable with being uncomfortable and for there to be a genuine introspection into our sacred institution. For if we truly live into our UU values, our river will be the one that Martin Luther King Jr. wrote about in his letters from Birmingham Jail. Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I know that we can become this mighty stream because together with you, I am stronger than without you.